Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is 2-time Tony Award-winning director and choreographer Jerry Mitchell, the creative force behind Broadway favorites like Hairspray, Kinky Boots, and Legally Blonde. And most recently, Devil Wears Prada, which is currently running on the West End, and Boop, which had its Broadway debut this season. Jerry's work proves how powerful storytelling can be, using music and movement to spark joy, connection, and reinvention at every stage of life. Jerry, welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Really appreciate it. So you've helped bring some unforgettable stories to life on stage. How do you see storytelling in theater shaping the way people understand their own lives and journeys?
Well, theater has the great ability to bring people together in a dark space without anything to distract them. So everyone's there to hear the same story at the same time. And when they leave the theater, they walk away with that story. Live theater is a very, very special and unique experience that can only happen with that particular group of people you happen to show up with for the same performance. It's a very powerful tool to communicate with people.
And I think it's amazing because every performance does have its unique differences. And even though the script is the same, the actors are the same, it can be a very different experience for the audience and probably for the performers from show to show. Well,
I always like to say, I love to return to my shows about 3 months into the run because the actors have filled in all of the space and they found how to create the full character, usually by opening night, but 3 months into the run, everything is just clicking and the machine is working so beautifully. It's so beautifully oiled and the performances have definitely filled out. And then I go back in 6 months and I have to give notes to bring everybody back.
That's great. So your audiences span many different generations. Have you noticed differences in how younger and older audiences connect to your work?
I find that audiences do connect in different ways. We were working on, for instance, a musical called Becoming Nancy, and it's about a young boy who gets cast in the school musical Oliver as the role of Nancy in East Dulwich in London. And it's in development. We just did it in the UK, and it's looking for a theater on the West End. It's a beautiful story, coming-of-age story. And we had some children's matinees when we did it at the Alliance in Atlanta. And these young kids responded to this high school environment on stage in a way that was truly magical. I recorded a couple of the times that young kids were in the house because their reaction, they were so much wiser to what was going on because they're living it. And of course, the parents, who also are a big part of component of the storytelling, respond to the adult version of how do you care for a child when a child is different than you and you don't have the tools to help that child. And that was really wonderful to watch parents, mothers and fathers and grandparents crying at the emotional journey of the leading character.
That has to be so fulfilling for you as an artist and bringing that story to life, just realizing how many lives you're impacting and helping people kind of, experience their own journeys.
Well, I read it. It was a book and I read the book. And the minute I finished the book, I called my lawyer and said, you've got to give me the rights to this story because I have to turn it into a musical because it sang to me, obviously the kids are rehearsing Oliver. So the idea of a musical within a musical automatically sang to me and I wanted to tell that story.
That's great. That's wonderful. Well, I've had the pleasure of interviewing Terry Farrell on this podcast and we talked at length about aging in Hollywood and the need for actors to evolve as they age. Your career has evolved through many eras and styles and roles. What keeps you motivated to keep reinventing yourself?
I'm inspired by people that I've looked up to my entire life who are still working in the business, and even those who are gone, their work that still exists that I get to see either in film, television, or at the library and in archival footage, which I always am going and watching. But I'm also inspired by the younger generation and the young people and the way they see the world. And a lot of them I hire for my musicals. Of course, young people who are doing their, I had 16 or 17 kids making their Broadway debut in Boop the Musical. And watching them have that first experience is really kind of magical. It's just a magical experience. I remember when I made my Broadway debut, I was 20 years old, for Agnes DeMille in a revival of Brigadoon at the Majestic Theater. I'll never forget that event in my life because it was something I had worked towards. And when it finally happened, it was such a, you know, such a milestone for me.
That's great. And it seems like there's such a, in general, at least, a collegiality amongst the Broadway community. I was watching, we're going to be seeing Marjorie Prime this weekend, and yeah, a video, you know, with June Squibb, who I think I read was the oldest actor opening a show on Broadway. And just the respect that she had for the rest of the cast. And then I believe it was Chris Lowell who was talking about the respect that he had for the older, you know, and more seasoned folks in the cast, but just loved seeing that and how they were gelling and bringing that story to life.
When I was doing the full Monty, I had the great pleasure of working with Kathleen Freeman, who's no longer with us. Kathleen was Ta-Tay-Tee-Toe-Too in Singing in the Rain. And of course, in all of the Jerry Lewis movies, she was always the comedic woman in the movies, and her comic timing was absolutely spectacular. And learning from her at that late stage of her life, and watching her experience a live musical at that age, and how she brought herself to the work every day. Same thing with Ann Miller. I worked with Ann Miller on a production of Follies at the Paper Mill Playhouse. I choreographed it, and Ann was in her 80s, well in her 80s, and she played Carlotta. And I remember going to give her notes backstage one night, and I knocked on her dressing room door and said, "Ann, it's Jerry, can I come in?" She said, "Sure, come on in." She was wrapped up in a towel, and she'd just gotten out of the shower, and I was giving her notes for the next day. And she said, "Sit down, sit down." I sat down and she looked at me and I looked into her eyes and I saw a 19-year-old. She was so eager to be the best that she could be, even at that age, that she through all of her experiences, here was this young choreographer, and she was willing to listen and take the notes because I was out front watching. I found that to be so moving to me. And I remember that very,
That's really remarkable. I love that story. Thank you for sharing that. Now, related to that, Picasso once said, "It takes a long time to become young." In other words, youthfulness isn't an age, it's a mindset. And for you, how does creativity fuel longevity, both personally and professionally?
I mean, it is what keeps you young, isn't it? Being able to work. And of course, as a dancer and choreographer, my life is based on physical work, mm-hmm. right? So I'm in the studio or I'm in the gym exercising. And as I get older, I have great associates and assistants who do what I used to do. But I'm still up and about quite a bit. And, you know, always at the doctor's getting something repaired, something drained, something fixed. I've had knee surgeries, shoulders, back, wrists. You know, it's athletes. Dancers are athletes. There's no Absolutely. Question about it. And the maintenance for a career in theater for a physical dancer is, you know, it's part of your daily process. I've been doing it for 45 years on Broadway.
That's tremendous. So now, talk a little about
55 years when I first started at 10, okay. And I'm 65 now. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Talk a little about that, because you started out as a performer, then choreographer, now director. Not that you ever gave up any of the other ones as you've kind of moved on in your career, but how did that evolve? And was directing really your ultimate goal, or are there still goals to be met?
It was my ultimate goal. I think I always knew I would be a director choreographer, but I wanted to dance also, and I loved dancing. And I stopped dancing when I was 23. I decided I really wanted to focus on being the choreographer. And I had some experiences in college and in high school, even in grade school, choreographing and directing. But I was now on Broadway. I think it was in my fourth show, On Your Toes, with Makarova. And I was dancing in Balanchine Ballets, restaged by Peter Martins, and dancing. Donald Sadler choreographed all the original stuff. And one day we were working on a piece, and it wasn't quite going well. And I told some of my ideas to the producer, John Macheri, who was also the conductor and behind the whole thing. And somehow the word got back to Donald that I had an idea, and Donald came to me and said, "What's the idea?" And Dirk Lombard, his associate, who was his associate. So we threw a couple of those ideas into the number, and I saw that an idea that I had could actually end up on the stage. And I said, "Okay, it's time for me to start exploring that part of my creativity and what I want to do." And that was around 23. And I just stopped, and I became assistant and associate to everyone in the business who would have me.
That's great. And, you know, I know one of the achievements that you've had in your career is really the philanthropic side of it as well, because you've been instrumental in Broadway Bears, I believe, as well.
Yeah. So I was an assistant for almost 16, 17 years. Michael Bennett, Jerry Robbins, Ron Field, Joe Layton, Anna White. You know, I danced with so many of the great choreographers who were working on Broadway and wanting to be a choreographer myself. And of course, I had sort of given up dance, but I was 30, and Jeff Calhoun, my dear friend, who's a choreographer director, was assisting Tommy Tune on a new musical called The Will Rogers Follies. And they needed a dancer. And he said, "Would you be interested?" And I said, "Yes." And so I went back and danced in the show. While I was dancing in the show, I was appearing on a drum, practically naked, in this big Follies number. And I was getting a lot of attention. And we were raising money for the Broadway Cares Easter Bonnet Competition, which was one of the fundraising tools Broadway Cares does to raise money for its organization. A light bulb went off over my head. A friend in my dressing room said, "Why don't you go dance on a bar at Splash in that costume and make some money for our Easter Bonnet competition?" And I thought, I can choreograph this show. I'll choreograph a benefit. So I called some other guys, put together a benefit, and we made $8,000. And I said, I can do this better. I'll add girls. I added girls. 6 months later, we did the second benefit of Broadway Bears. I made $17,000. I said, I can do this better. I'll add a theme. 6 months later, I did the third one. Cut to last year, the 33rd edition of Broadway Bears, and one night at Hammerstein Ballroom, made $2.4 million wow. In one night. Since its inception in 1992, Broadway Bears has made over $30 million for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And amazing. Just to add to your introduction, I was awarded my third Tony Award, the Isabel Stevenson Tony Award for Philanthropy, and from the Tony Awards 2 years ago for that work with Broadway Cares. But, you know, a lot of my friends were dying of AIDS when I came to New York City. I lost 10 of my college friends, and I had to do something, and I created the show. And in turn, by giving to my community and creating a safe space for my community and raising money for the community with the help of millions of other dancers and creative artists, that philanthropic event gave me a career, because people were able to see me as a choreographer, and then I was being asked to choreograph shows. Jack O'Brien and Terrence McNally, who hired me for the Full Monty, had seen Broadway Bears, and I remember Jack saying, Jerry knows how to take clothes off guy, anybody better than anybody in the business. We got to hire him for the Full Monty. So that was how I got hired for the Full Monty.
Perfect fit. Yeah. And I know you're not looking for congratulations, but congratulations on that. Thank on that you. Success. That's really remarkable.
There's a lot of people who have contributed to the success of Broadway Bears over the years. It has, not only has it helped me also with my career, but Sergio Trujillo, Josh Rhodes, Lauren Lataro, so many young choreographers on Broadway working now actually worked and choreographed numbers for Broadway Bears before they ever did a Broadway show. So I feel that that aspect of it also has helped lift our community in such a wonderful way. There's no
place, I didn't even thought about that, but what a great training ground.
Like New York City, our community is so tightly knit, and the Broadway Cares wing of that, Broadway Bears, Broadway Cares, has just made, helped the community bond in such a magnificent way. Just this week was the Red Bucket Follies, and they broke another record by raising $7.5 million with the six-week fundraising for the tours and all the Broadway shows, collecting money in the Red Bucket, selling, you know, t-shirts, hats, posters, whatever we can sell, we sell for charity. And it's kind of astounding the kind of money that Broadway Cares has been able to generate and give back to the community.
That's great.
Broadway, all across the United States.
Sure. So what lessons have you learned from performers or colleagues who've stayed active in the industry for a long time?
Well, I think you know, someone I look up to a great deal is Jack O'Brien, who was my collaborator for 10 years on Hairspray and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and so many shows. Jack taught me a great deal about longevity because he is always there. He always shows up. And, you know, even Michael Bennett used to say to me, he said, don't wait for the muses. He said, just show up and do the work. And really, that's what it is. It's about showing up.
That's great. So simple, but yet profound in there.
Yeah. You got to show up and do the work.
Exactly. So you've worked with some amazing artists, some collaborators over the years, like Elton John, Cyndi Lauper, David Foster, and even the amazing Shana Taub. What are some of the key traits that you've identified of a strong collaborator?
Well, you know, everyone's uniquely individual, all those people you mentioned. And part of what makes creating theater and stories so exciting is those people you get to share the experience with, and meeting them where they are and understanding how together you can pull the best of yourself and the best of them to come up with the best version of a story. That's really where the collaboration in a musical is so unique to art in theater. Even though most of my work is in commercial theater, the collaboration is really what makes a success. If the collaboration is successful and the story is clear and everyone is on the same page, you have a great shot at making it a success.
Well said. So have you seen ageism show up in the theater? And do you think Broadway is more welcoming to older actors than film and TV, or does it face the same blind spots?
I think it's more open, but I think that it is sort of, you have to stay relevant. You have to work. I have to work on being up to date on what is popular, what is in vogue, what might be exciting to an audience of all ages, not just a particular age group. And that's the challenge. Making musicals is like fishing with a net. You throw it into the sea. If it comes back with a lot of fish, you're going to have a success. But if it comes back half empty, you're not going to run very long.
Sure. You know, and I know there have been, you know, a couple of those in recent years. Right now, Queen of Versailles is experiencing that. And, you know, I know it's, you know, shame for all of the folks involved that it's not going to last longer. But, you know, I guess that's the reality of theater making, right?
Theater is expensive. And in order for it to run, you need to fill the house. It's just business.
Yep. That's a really good point because, you know, there's the art, but, you know, it's certainly the business side of it as well, that has to be a major component.
It is. In commercial theater, it's there are more letters in the word business than there are show. My mom and dad ran a restaurant that my grandparents ran before that. And I grew up in the restaurant business in southwestern Michigan. My mom always used to say, it's our job to get them to come back tomorrow.
That's exactly right. And that's another field that I think would be a hard one because, you know, unless you are one of those that has reservations that fills it up, you never know from day to day what your business is going to be.
You never know. You have to get the customers to come back.
Yep, absolutely. So this is a question that every Roundtable Talk guest gets. What are you looking forward to as you age?
What am I looking forward to as I age? More of the same, actually. I feel, who said it? I was just watching something. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. You know, it doesn't really dawn on you until you've actually had that experience, right? But I feel still so fortunate and privileged that I get to do what I do and make a living doing it.
That's great. Well said. And I forget who said that quote as well, but I've always liked that one.
Yeah.
So you built your Broadway reputation as a choreographer, as we've talked about. You're a 3-time Tony winner, 2-time for best choreography. How do dance and physical expression contribute to well-being or even longevity?
Well, dancers have that great gift of keeping in shape for a very long time if they choose to, because of the work that is required, and movement, you know, move it or lose it, right? So we're always physically active. And it's served me well, even with all the injuries and all the repairs, it's served me very well. And I feel fortunate. I still have both my hips, right?
That's right.
My brothers have both had a hip replacement, but I'm still working with my original hips. So I feel very fortunate.
That's great. So what have you learned about the body's ability to adapt even as time passes?
Body is an incredible instrument that can do incredible things. I think what I've learned as I've aged is that diet and exercise work much better together than separate. The food that you eat, how you fuel your body is as important as how you use your body to exercise and express itself. The fuel will actually help you in the longevity, without question.
Sure. Do you have a particular diet that you prescribe or subscribe to, or
pretty high protein, low fat, just Mediterranean diet has always sort of been my thing. Everything in moderation, but I do enjoy a cocktail once in a while, and I also love to cook some of my high calorie Italian meals.
That's great. What was the restaurant that you grew up at, in and around? Was that Italian?
My parents, my mom's side was Italian. My dad's side was Polish. So okay. There was a lot of great food in the family.
I can only imagine. So if everyone could bring a little choreography into their daily lives, what would that look like?
I think everyone does bring a little choreography into their daily lives. I love going to public spaces and sitting and watching people and how they move through the public spaces. David Rockwell, who's also a genius architect and a constant collaborator, Kinky Boots, Hairspray, Legally Blonde, Pretty Woman, so many shows we've done together, Boop. David called me in as a consulting choreographer when they were doing the JetBlue terminal here at JFK. And I got to work with a team of people, and we were studying patterns that people made in the snow, and you know how people choose where to move through public space. And we went to Grand Central, and we looked at a lot of different spaces, David and I. But it is a dance. It's a commercial. You know, when people are in physical spaces together, they are actually doing a dance, not to bump into each other. And patterns start to emerge. And if you watch people in those spaces, you'll see those patterns. And it was something that went into the designing of the JetBlue terminal.
That's brilliant that they had that foresight to bring in a choreographer.
That was David's sure. foresight. I mean, yep. David's brilliant that way, the way he thinks about space and how it serves. There's a story being told in every space.
Amazing, amazing.
That's how he develops stuff. It's brilliant.
That's great. So how do you approach mentorship and guiding younger artists?
I have a lot of, I speak to a lot of younger people whenever I'm asked to. I love sharing what knowledge I know and what I've learned. I think I learned so much from the people I followed, Michael, Bob, Jack, so many of them taught me so many great lessons. And, you know, many of those things are still, I apply them all the time, sometimes knowing and sometimes just not even thinking. So the experience and knowledge you get from building a musical, how to save money, how to make it work, and as Broadway gets more and more and more expensive, those lessons are really valuable to creating a successful show.
So speaking about how Broadway is getting more expensive, I know that is, you know, really challenging to put up new content, particularly yes. musicals. How, where do you see it, will there be a reconciling there, or where do you see that going, the business of Broadway?
I'm not sure where that's going to go, but I do think there's a broken model that needs some fixing.
Sure, because when I think back, for example, not that it was not an expensive show to run in its own right, but Sunset Boulevard back in 95 and the staging and everything that all of the moving parts, and then the more stripped down version that was just on Broadway was interesting to see. And even that didn't recoup, from what I understand.
No, it did not. It did not. And it couldn't have been more successful. So there's a real challenge. There's a real challenge. Broadway, especially for new work that isn't fueled by star power or fueled by titles, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge.
Sure.
And finding space for those stories is important, because along with them comes a lot of young, new artists that have new voices, and we need those voices.
Sure. And like you said, with Boop, you had certainly a critical mass of folks making their Broadway debut, which was really exciting.
Yeah. And a first-time composer on Broadway, David Foster, certainly not a first-time composer in the world, but certainly on Broadway. And we had a very fun and exciting show, and the audiences that saw it had a wonderful time, but we never found our core audience, so we didn't survive.
Sure. Yeah, which is unfortunate. It was a great show.
Thank you.
So do you think mentorship helps keep artists young in spirit?
Sure. I feel like my relationships with my younger creative artists that are in my life, and they fuel me as much as I'm giving them advice and fueling them. It's a give and take. There's no question.
Sure. So mentoring is, of course, as you were saying, a two-way exchange. Wisdom going out, fresh perspective coming back.
God, I learned so much from the younger people in my team. It's amazing.
Sure. Yep. And I think you just answered the question, but do you think mentorship helps keep older artists young in spirit?
Of course. I think that ability to connect with a younger artist and see the way they relate to the world and the way they communicate with their own age group is so important.
That's great. So when you look back in your career, what moments feel the most meaningful? And is there anything on your list that you still want to accomplish? Well, the most meaningful might be a hard thing to say, but particularly
that often. I have to tell you, it's not something that I really do. I'm so involved in what the next show is, the next group of artists that I'm getting, that I'm lucky enough to collaborate with. I've got three new musicals that I'm developing. I have six productions of musicals that I've already done that are being remounted. Three productions of Pretty Woman this year, two productions of Kinky Boots. Prada's running in London, but there's talk of two other future productions. And, we're just getting those things settled. And we're sending out a tour of Boop this fall. So there are multiple productions, Australia, South Africa, Japan, Korea, London, and national tours in America. There's a production in Germany that's being planned. So I have to travel a lot, which is fun, and I enjoy it. And I also have teams in New York and in the UK who handles some of those productions for me, a lot of those productions for me, which frees me up to do the new productions.
That's great. That's got to be really energizing.
Yeah.
And speaking of Boop, we were able to see Jasmine Amy Rogers recently in Spelling Bee, which was great to see her.
Isn't she wonderful?
Yeah.
Such a different, that's when you see Jasmine go from Boop to Spelling Bee, and how brilliant she handled both of those roles and how different those roles were. You really understand this girl's got it. She's really got it.
Yep. And I know there's a lot of buzz, and obviously the Tony nomination, but a lot of buzz with her, kind of discovering a star. So congratulations on that. And I know she did it herself, but she's got the goods, but yet it was great that she had that platform too, to be noticed.
She was in Becoming Nancy for me before this, the show I was talking about at the Alliance, playing a principal part. And she was spectacular in that also. So Jasmine has quite a career ahead of her.
That's wonderful. Well, last question. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
Patience.
I love patience. That.
Patience is the one thing that so many young artists have to learn. You have to learn patience.
That's great. Well said. Well, Jerry Mitchell, it's been a true honor. Thank you so much for the time that you've given us and to those listening.
My pleasure.
And thank you also to Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer. I'm Derek Dunham, and we'll see you next time on Roundtable Talk.